Talk about a first world broadcaster problem, but when we're done with this pandemic, we'll be able to record our podcasts in nice studio microphones like the one I'm using now and not via Zoom. Hello, it's John Williams, and here comes a pretty good edition of the Mincing Rascals, although there's a couple glitches technically. You'll hear them, but I think you're used to the sound of these things, and we appreciate your listening. I think you're going to like this one. This week, the voice of that zany doctor the president put forward, one of those frontline physicians who endorses hydroxychloroquine like he does. We'll also talk about what the state of Illinois is and is not doing for the students. We'll talk about Joe Biden's vice presidential pick, too. Lots of news to come. Remember, you can always email us, johnwilliams@wgnradio.com, and continue to share the Mincing Rascals, gang. We really appreciate that. It makes a difference. Oh, by the way, you know what makes a difference? You're getting your knee pain fixed. Go to the Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park and Oak Brook. If you've got knee pain, you do not have to have knee pain. You do not have to have knee pain. They'll use digital imaging. They see where the tissue's gone away. They put a lubricant into that spot. It's a quick, non-surgical, pain-free procedure. First time I had it done, I've been there a couple times. First time I had it done, I looked over to the left where the imaging machine is, and I saw an image of a knee, and I thought, oh, that's some stock footage they have. And I said, what is that? And they go, that's you. I said, you're kidding, because I could see this needle sticking into the tissue. And I turned down and looked at my knee, and son of a gun, they'd already begun to put the fluid in there. I had not even felt it. The fluid went in there, and the pain was eased. In fact, the next day I went to play. Actually, I left there, went to play basketball, and couldn't remember which knee it was that was giving me pain. That's how effective this is. Okay, so how do you get there? JointReliefInstitute.com or call 708-888-0000. Joint Relief Institute, 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Today is Thursday. It's July 30th, 2020, the worst year ever. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals podcast we record on Thursdays. I'm at WGN Radio. You can listen to me weekdays from 9 to noon. Steve Bertrand.
I'm Steve Bertrand from the WGN Radio newsroom.
I'm Eric Zorn, the Demon Seed columnist from the Tribune.
I was going to use that. By the way, we normally have a larger coffee clutch than we have today to all of our friends and colleagues who can't join us on this Zoom call podcast. We missed you guys. And
must be a huge disappointment for the people tuning in.
Zorn's going to have to talk more.
I think I talk too much as it is.
No way.
But all right, well, get ready for my...
You're the grandfather of this thing. You birthed us. You gave us the name, Mincing Rascals. We need your voice more, you demon, you.
Get ready for the filibusters today, then. All right.
That demon seed thing.
God had told the devil that this same woman that you messed with, this same woman that you deceived, her seed will bruise your head.
That came from one of the frontline, quote-unquote, doctors that stood with white lab coats. Almost like a sketch from Saturday Night Live in front of the Supreme Court, where they said that hydroxychloroquine is okay and that you don't have to wear masks. What was the takeaway from that scene and that story?
Is that the one where they said that the medicine comes from alien DNA?
Yes. That was the one doctor who does have a medical degree. She practices at a clinic of her own in Texas, but she's also a preacher.
The demon spoke and said they have captured the husband's, you know, private. It's under the water somewhere. The man cannot get it up and can't have children.
Her most outlandish statements come in the guise of her as a preacher.
Right.
She does ask her patients to wear masks, but she's on record as saying she doesn't think that's necessary.
Well, to be honest with you, when you brought up the demon seed, I was thinking of the seed packets that people apparently have been getting in the mail this week. I think she's kind of a goof. I didn't pay too much attention to her.
Well, the vice president then hosted some of those people afterwards. The lengths to which they will reach to validate some of their notions is just, it's insane to me.
He's not talking on purpose.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
No, it's true. I don't know why they trot out these quacks. I don't know why Trump continues to cling to hydroxychloroquine and other ideas like the fact that masks don't really matter that much. If you look around the world, you look around the country, that the leaders, the presidents and governors who have taken this seriously, who have admitted there's a problem, who've said that we're going to work together, we're going to listen to the science, we're going to do what we need to do to get this under control now, have been the ones whose popularity has gone up. Look at Governor DeWine in Ohio, or Angela Merkel in Germany, all these places where the governors have not tried to open up things too quickly, have not scoffed at the science, have not called it a hoax. Those are the people who are doing well in the polls. And you look at people like Donald Trump and Governor DeSantis and the governors who have messed up, and they're sinking in the polls dramatically over this. And I just don't, it's like, this was such an opportunity. This was a chance for Trump to erase the last 3 years of craziness in his administration and take the reins and ride through a crisis and come out and say, look, I was the guy you needed to run this because I'm a businessman. I'm a smart guy. I can do this. And, you know, it would have been a Democrat's nightmare to go into that. You could have, the economy would have been, what did we lose today with the, we had 33% drop in GDP. You could have ridden that out if you were the guy saying, look, we know there's a problem, we're on it. But he's not doing that. And I think it's this political malpractice of an incredibly high level.
Right. So that 33% could be in the rearview mirror, but instead it just might be a preview of what's coming again. Right. I mean, because we're in no better shape than we were when we shut down, or we're in worse shape.
But he sure hitched his horse to the wrong wagon, right? Like, if he thought hydroxychloroquine, if I promote this and that's the miracle drug, then I'll be seen as a smart leader, I guess. I mean, that must be the logic. But now that it's been demonstrated to be not beneficial, why not just drop it, right? It worked for you. We're happy, fine. But this, nobody's blaming COVID-19 on Donald Trump. At least I'm not. You guys might be. But if we all thought that drug might be helpful and then we discovered it's not, you move on. I don't think he has stock in the company. I don't know why he's hanging on to that.
What has he ever moved on from? I don't think that's really in his DNA.
Well, he also says he sees himself as a cheerleader, right? He sees himself as someone who's a cheerleader for this country. And if he keeps saying, you know, rah, rah, go. And that maybe can work if you're trying to, like, get people have consumer confidence or something like that. But the virus doesn't care about your cheers. Virus doesn't care about your optimism. The virus is going to virus. So, you know, the idea that it matters, like, if he plumps up a cure that doesn't work and he's promised a vaccine, say it's coming along. One of the things you've got to do in politics is you've got to under promise and over deliver. And he just completely messed that up.
That's why I was disappointed in Mike Pence. So the task force did have a press conference, or Mike Pence did speak this week, and he was saying things that were boosterish again. You know, he was saying that despite what we're seeing in the South, things are getting better. And I thought, they're not.
He's trying to stay on the ticket.
He's trying to lift our spirits. And I'm like, that, I don't want you to do that, especially since it's not working.
I was kind of serious there, Eric. Wasn't there some squawking earlier this week about the fact that the vice president might be removed or might be replaced on the ticket?
There was talk that I heard that if he gets desperate, what he's going to do is he's going to bump Pence off a ticket and install Nikki Haley.
Right.
Yeah, former South Carolina governor and a UN ambassador, that she might be able to bring over some women voters and some voters of color, since she's Indian.
Right.
East Asian Indian origin. That was some thinking that would be his Hail Mary pass politically.
Okay, can I give you a fun fact?
Yes.
That I think I gave John, but he wasn't impressed with. Only twice in our history has an incumbent president unseated a vice president for the next election. It happened during FDR, and it happened in Abraham Lincoln did it, replaced his first vice president with the second one. So in both cases, the vice presidents who were replaced would have succeeded to the presidency, because Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. So his first, had the second guy been on the second ticket, he would have become president. And it was the same with FDR. I think we replaced him with Truman. And had he not been replaced, that guy would have been president. I didn't put that pretty very well, but I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think that's why I wasn't impressed. I had trouble following all of that.
So both men who were replaced would have been president, right, had they not been replaced.
I'm interested in who...
You can edit that out.
I'm interested in who, you know, Joe Biden will pick, and everybody seems to think it'll be Kamala Harris, and that's fine. That's a very real scenario, that in a little more than 4 years, Kamala Harris will be the president of the United States. And I think that will be on the back of people's minds when they go to the polling place. Do you like her as the next president after Joe Biden? I mean, you can see how that would be an order of events. I don't know that she helps him that much that way.
Well, that's one of the things that they were saying, that militating against her is the fact that she is ambitious and that she wants to be president. And they want the vice president to be more deferential and not as ambitious. I'm not sure why that's such a big problem. Just about every vice president that's ever lived has probably wanted to be president. I'm hearing some talk about Karen Bass right now. She's a Florida congresswoman. She's the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. She's a little older. I think Kamala Harris and Susan Rice are both in their mid-50s, and Karen Bass is in her 60s, mid-60s. So I think if they're looking younger, they might not pick her. But she's a very impressive person. I've seen her in some of the committee hearing meetings, and she's formidable. And again, an African-American woman. I'm hearing less talk about Stacey Abrams than I did before, or Val Demings. There was apparently Biden was carrying around these talking points in his hand the other day. Did you guys see
right,
the story?
Right.
The AP photographer caught it, and it had like a list of talking points about Harris. And I don't know if that means that he's going to pick her, or if he's just ready to respond to questions that are going to arise about her. And the big question that people seem to have, I think, is overblown, is, well, what are you going to do about the bad blood between you that was caused? And I think it was the first Democratic debate, maybe the second one, where she really took him on about his role in opposing busing. You know, remember that issue so many years
ago? Sure. Well, Lisa brought that up a couple pods ago, Eric, and I can't believe that will be an issue when you consider the things that the Republicans said about each other. Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, all of that. You remember that. And then the next day, they're all buddies and endorsing each other.
Yeah, totally. I don't see that as an obstacle at all. I think the question is going to be which one of these women is going to be best equipped to take the national stage and take the fight to the Trump administration. And that's one of the reasons why Susan Rice is questionable, because she's never run for any office at all. She's had a lot of high positions in government. She's extremely smart. Nobody doubts that. And she's extremely capable, or at least knowledgeable. And she's also pretty good in meetings and strategizing and so on. Her strength happens to be foreign policy, which is also Biden's strength. So that might be redundant to pick her.
I think you need to pick a campaigner. And I think Kamala Harris is a great campaigner. Joe Biden, I was listening to him take questions earlier this week after a speech. And, you know, I don't know that he's lost anything intellectual, but rhetorical, as a rhetorician, as a speaker, he's it's kind of funny I slipped there. He's not what he used to be. He does not sound that vibrant. I just think that's, I don't know how you can argue that. So
yeah,
I think someone who's tough on the trail, I think, is going to be really key. And I don't know that Susan Rice is that.
You know, when the history of 2020 is written, it may be that the pandemic was one of the best things that could have happened to Biden's campaign. That he is able to look prudent and sensible and cautious and everything else, staying in his house. Instead of being out on the trail, where he doesn't get the crowds that Trump gets. He doesn't fire up the enthusiasm.
Right now,
this is a referendum on Trump for the most part. The Trump campaign this past week has been trying really hard to gin up this idea that in Biden's America, everything's going to be really scary.
You have reached the 911 police emergency line. Due to defunding of the police department, we're sorry, but no one is here to take your call. If you're calling to report a rape, please press 1.
He's got this really cynical ploy about the suburbs. He's talking to suburban housewives and so on, where he's trying to make it. He's saying that we're not going to have mixed housing in the suburbs.
You know, the suburbs, people fight all of their lives to get into the suburbs and have a beautiful home. There will be no more low-income housing forced into the suburbs. I abandoned and took away and just rescinded the rule. It's been hell for suburbia.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit. So the idea is that there can be requirements for low-income housing. It's been an issue in Deerfield. And the opponents there said, well, we're worried about our schools, which I, you know, many ways, I think, coded language. And so it is a thing that scares people. But does it scare the suburban voters who have abandoned Trump? It seems to me that those are the suburban voters who may well welcome more integrated housing in their town. No, I'm serious. I wonder about that.
I just don't think it's the kind of thing that, first of all, when you're talking about local zoning issues and stuff, it's not something that a president's going to have a ton of control over. There are some policy things that a president can do with that. But the fact that he's going to save the suburbs and Joe Biden is going to destroy the suburbs is ludicrous. And it's kind of like his effort to make it sound like Biden is the one who's championing getting rid of abolishing the police. You know, Biden won't even say defund the police. He's staying way away from that.
He said right away, I'm not in favor of it. I mean, he said directly, right. I don't like it.
And I think he's open, as a lot of people are and should be open, to the idea that some police resources should be redeployed toward social work and mental health care treatment and things like that. That all makes a lot of sense. If you can get people to believe that the Democrats are going to get rid of a bunch of police and make you less safe and have a lot of poor people move into your neighborhood, then you can start working on these culture wars that will take people's eye off the ball. The fact that you're extremely corrupt and that your administration took this COVID outbreak and it's resulted in more than 150,000 deaths. John said earlier he doesn't blame Trump for coronavirus. I don't blame him for the coronavirus either for coming here. But if you look at the way it's been handled in a lot of other countries, it's been handled much more successfully. And so I do blame him for not handling it better. And the fact that he's not handling it better has led to many tens of thousands of deaths more than are necessary.
I mean, it is just, to me, embarrassing with the way where we are in this pandemic. I never thought when this was starting, first of all, I underestimated it from the beginning. I agree that that's true. But I never thought that we would be watching Europe, you know, almost completely recovered while we have our hair on fire. You know, while we would be seeing Europe ban visitors from the U.S. because we can't seem to stop this thing. I mean, I feel like a third world country here. It's just, it's pathetic to me.
Yeah. And of course, not all of it is on Trump, because so many people are being so churlish about masks and so insistent on gathering in public spaces and going out and just acting.
Well,
like
you're not going to blame Trump on that, Eric?
I'm not going to blame him completely. I do blame him some for the mask stuff, and I do blame him some, but I think there's something in human nature, or at least in American nature, something like that is causing people to be less and less responsible. And it's really amazing to me to see this. And I do think that if Trump had modeled better mask wearing and had really insisted on it and said from the beginning, this is patriotic, this is what we have to do, we would be better off. But I still, there seems to be this strain in people in the public. They go to Costco and have a fit, or Target, and they rip all the masks off the racks because it's this an affront to their freedom, their liberty.
So anyone harassing me to wear a mask, you guys are violating federal law. Did you get that? Get that on camera, ma'am.
That's not all Trump. Trump may encourage those people, but you know, you couldn't.
It seems like every state has to learn the lesson by themselves too, doesn't it? That when Florida, who is that columnist, Eric, that you reposted?
That was Dennis Byrne.
That's what I thought.
Dennis used to write for the Sun Times, and he wrote for us for a while. And he moved to Florida, and he did a piece in early May saying, basically, na-na-na-boo-boo. Governor DeSantis has it all right, and Governor Pritzker has it all wrong. Look at how well we're doing in Florida and how poorly you're doing in Illinois. Well, you know, 2 months later, it was the opposite was happening. We had it under control. We had a day with one reported death over the weekend. It's back up to in the teens today, I think, right?
We are maybe 30 today, but
the
number of cases is going up.
The number of cases going up. I mean, things aren't great in Illinois, but they're out of control in Florida.
I mean, I guess the point of all of this is that the states themselves all seem to be oblivious to what's happening in New York. Wisconsin still doesn't have does Wisconsin have a face mask law now?
The governor today issued an executive order requiring it beginning Saturday.
Wait.
He had an emergency order that he put in place early on that the Republican legislature went to court and sued to stop. And the conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court agreed with the Republicans. So they shut down. So like in Dane County and in Milwaukee County, they have a mask ordinances there, but there's no statewide one. Then they had a state Supreme Court election in Wisconsin where the liberal won. the liberal is actually being sworn in, I think, on this Saturday. So Evers is issuing this order effective Saturday with the hopes that he's doing an end around the old Supreme Court and we'll have better luck perhaps with the new Supreme Court.
Well, that's still a self-inflicted wound.
So aggravating that this has become politicized in the way it has. This is public health we're talking about, and we're talking about, you know, now we have, Chicago has a quarantine thing in effect.
You need to get that, Eric?
I'm sorry. I thought I turned off my phone.
Is it Krista McQuarrie asking to come back?
All right, let's go back. Where were we talking? Let's just go back and edit that part out, and we'll talk about it. You know, the frustration that I have is, well, right now we've got Wisconsin. If you travel to Wisconsin from Chicago, you've got a quarantine for 14 days when you come back because we think Wisconsin is so unsafe. Now, I think that's basically symbolic, but it's essentially a way of warning people not to go to Wisconsin because it's out of control there. And one of the reasons it's out of control there is this political dynamic.
I was just going to say the parts of Wisconsin I go to, which are Milwaukee, or I've been up there twice since it started, are very much like Chicago. I mean, with the social distancing, the mask wearing percentage and all of that. And then I read from or hear from people in other parts of the state that it's just wide open. You know, that they're, you know, people have gone camping up by the Dells and come home because no one's doing anything differently.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think the death of Herman Cain on Thursday morning, the announcement of that death, is going to change anything? I was just thinking earlier in the morning about how there really haven't been that many.
There's a little button on the side of that thing, Eric.
I know.
You turn it down.
I hope you keep this in because this is my favorite part of
this podcast. Definitely staying. Yeah.
I turn off my phone and my iPad ring together. And, oh, God.
Your point, I think, is a good one, that Herman Cain could be to COVID-19 what Rock Hudson was to AIDS.
My issue earlier this morning when I posted this was I thought, is John Prine the most famous person who has died so far of COVID-19? Now, there's like Roy Horn of Siegfried and Roy died. And then there was a Broadway actor, Nick Cordero, I think his name was.
Well, there was a very accomplished Broadway playwright, I believe, who died early on.
Right, but none of these people are household names. And I don't know if John Prine is a household name in my household, and maybe yours too, but he's a local guy, and I've got an affinity for folk music. It just struck me that there was nobody who everyone went, oh, my God, this disease took this person, and the nation kind of stopped for a moment. And I feel like maybe that was a moment this morning when Herman Cain died.
No, you don't think so, John?
He's further up the fame ladder, but I think Rock Hudson was a popular character in America, and Herman Cain is not. Rock Hudson was apolitical.
I'm not talking about popularity so much as just what people know, right? Isn't that what we're talking about? It's like somebody people know. Oh, I know that guy.
But I think it's going to devolve instantly into politics because the first time I did the story, fairly, I think I pointed out that he was at the president's rally in Tulsa, 10 days before he was hospitalized. I didn't do it in subsequent versions of his obituary, but I did it the first one. And I think that's what you're going to hear the talking heads debating about. You know, did he get it at the Bush or at the Trump rally? And then once that starts the argument, then people just are in their trenches again.
I think the everyman you're thinking about would be Tom Hanks. Not that he passed away. I think, though, when Tom Hanks got it, I think a lot of us kind of slapped our heads and went, oh, shit, this thing is real.
Well, if you remember, Tom Hanks got it the same day, or the announcement came the same day that the NBA closed down and that the WHO announced it was a pandemic. It was either the same day or the day after. And I think it did, John, take us from, what is this we're all washing our hands for all the time, to, oh, my goodness, this is really real. But then we got to that point, and then a lot of people, I think, are just kind of slacking off a little bit. It's annoying to be quarantined or to be staying at home so much. And then, so you need another shock to the system. I guess the panel, the consensus here is that Herman Cain is not a big enough figure to everyone go, oh, my God, we've lost Herman Cain.
No, right. I think that's it. By the way, I mean, I can't imagine who the person is whose death would suddenly motivate people to shy of the president. I mean, I just can't think of somebody whose death would.
I think any of the Kardashians.
A lot of us, when I came home in April I would thoroughly wash my hands and we would wipe off groceries and stuff. Now I don't even wash my hands as consistently. It dawned on me the other day as I used to. Maybe because I have more alcohol to rub my fingers under. But while we're very cognizant about masks these days, I think generally we are getting more lax about that. Do you guys agree with that?
I do. I have the same basic feeling, which is that I was really into hand washing before masks. Remember that early on they were saying we don't need to wear masks, but we were washing our hands all the time and there was a run on hand sanitizer and all that. And now it seems like, well, they're not as sure that it spreads as easily on surfaces. And I think there's guidance now that you don't need to wash all your groceries when you bring them home. And when you're doing things like touching a gas pump, you should probably wipe it off. But just in general, the risk is probably pretty low, especially when you're outside, especially in the summer. I'm definitely feeling that. I still have a problem remembering a mask sometimes. I'll get in the car and go somewhere and get like a few blocks away and go, ugh. So we've like now stored a bunch of masks in the car. But it's just like, it's easy to get casual about this. And I'm really trying not to. And the more that it keeps spreading, the more the cases keep going, the more I think some people are feeling like, well, this is just inevitable. They're not stopping this virus. So it's going to get me sooner or later. So I can stay inside all the time and deprive myself, or I can go ahead and live my life and get it and hope I'm not one of the people who gets it seriously. That seems to be what people are doing. You saw that. Did anyone see the video from Trump's campaign rally? It was in Texas. And they had the video of the room, and like there was one person in this, basically this crowded room, wearing a mask. Everybody was just like, hey, you know, it's fine. And you know, Herman Cain was at that Tulsa rally. 10 days later, he's hospitalized. I mean, you know, I don't think it's too crazy to connect those dots.
Well, they certainly could be connected. But the reason I don't think he's the Rock Hudson of it is because he was already partisan, you know, he was already on one side or the other.
The Florida Marlins have now lost 16 players to positive COVID tests, so they're on the bench for a couple of weeks. Until yesterday, not one other team in Major League Baseball had lost a player. So the team that the Marlins played, the Phillies, have a couple of people on staff, a coach and another individual, that have tested positive. Baseball, this way, has served as a sort of mini representation of what this virus battle is like. If one person misbehaves, he can get infected. And if everybody else isn't cautious, then they can get infected. Then you can shut down a whole country, a whole planet, a whole baseball season. As we record this today, it's not certain if baseball is going to be able to finish their season. The other teams are all, the Cubs and Sox are playing today, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I asked Sam Panionovich, who comes on my show a lot and talks about betting, wagering, gambling, on all sorts of things, including sports. And I asked him to set the over-under for games that MLB will play, each team this year. And he figured about 18. If he was going to set a line for baseball, it would be 18.
Wow.
Well, it's interesting to me. Baseball seems like, of all the sports that, you know, the major sports, it seems like the one that would be the safest because the game is played outdoors just about everywhere. And you're generally pretty far away, unless you're a catcher or maybe a first baseman, you're generally pretty far away from other players when you're on the field. Basketball, NBA is starting, I believe, on Thursday. They're starting up
tonight.
This season. Yeah. And I can't believe that they're going to play basketball because, you know, unless you play defense the way I used to play it, which is like hanging way back, you are right up, you are breathing on other people, you are sweating on other people.
Eric, if two people who don't have the virus hug, kiss, and play defense, they don't get the virus.
So, and you're in the bubble, you don't have the virus, right? And you're not getting out of the bubble. Baseball is, I agree, they're spacing out on the field. But they're not living in a bubble, right? So they're going home to their families.
Right.
And so the idea is that it might not even be someone who does something wrong. It might be someone who lives with someone who, you know, contracted the virus in some unknown way. And then they brought it back. And, you know, I made the point with you, John, and it lost a little of its power when the coach and the other staffer for the Phillies got sick. But the outbreak during the Phillies-Marlins series was almost completely among Marlins players. It wasn't being transmitted on the field. It was being transmitted in the dugout, I think, or in the bus. I mean, I'm really surprised that the players are as close as they are in the dugout. I can't believe they're not spacing them out there.
Well, and they're in the dugout, they're in the clubhouse, and they're bus to the airport, they're in the airplane together. I know that they have this bubble down in Orlando for the NBA, but you've got all kinds of people. To make that work, you'd have to have everybody remain in this bubble for the entire length of the season, not just the players, but all the support people, all the officials, all the TV people, everyone who's going to come in contact with people. Because once it gets out, once it gets loose in a bubble, you might as well forget your bubble, which is why it seems so unlikely to me that the NBA is going to be able to finish its season. But, you know, you hope for the best for that. And I really can't imagine football going forward. They've canceled football for the fall for the Illinois High School Association. It looks to me like college football is completely on the ropes this fall. And, you know, it's just like, this is one of these, the price we're going to pay for this is several more lost seasons.
I remember when June 1st seemed forever away, and boy, if we can just get to June 1st in Illinois, then we'll be through this thing. And now if they said it's going to be 2023, I'd be just like, yeah, whatever, hit me again. I mean, you know, I'm so bludgeoned by this thing now that I don't think there's any other setbacks we can get that would be as traumatic to me as some of those first sort of milestones were. Now I'm just like, all right, Ben. I was talking to the president of the College of DuPage, and we were talking about how COD is seeing a little uptick in enrollment because students that don't want to go back to four-year schools think they might just stay locally rather than living in a dorm somewhere. I asked him about college football for his college football team. He said he doesn't see it happening this year, and frankly, he doesn't know that they're going to have extracurricular stuff next year. He's not sure they'll have in-person learning. There is going to be no in-person learning at the College of DuPage, the largest community college in the country. They're not going to have any in-person learning there this year. And he's not sure that they'll come back next spring either. There's small exceptions to that rule.
There's a lot of threats from teachers to strike or just do a work stoppage if they're trying to have normal schools, try to have in-person learning in the public schools. And there are a lot of kids who take the CTA and who take school buses, and those are really hard to make safe because you can't really socially distance someone in a school bus. And I mean, it really looks like we have all this optimism about, oh, well, we'll put kids in pods and they'll be – but the kids go home and they leave their pods when they get home and they're in their neighborhoods. They're with their families, and their families don't stay in pods. It looks to me like we're headed for another lockdown. And until we do that, if we did it for a good couple of weeks, maybe a month, we could get out of this. But as it is, it just seems like the virus seems to be in control. And you listen to the health experts, and that's what they're telling you, that we are not in control right now. This virus is out of control.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that we're going to have another lockdown.
What does that mean to you, Steve?
It means that we're going to go back to where we were with non-essential businesses being closed in downtown areas, retail being closed, the restaurants. I don't see this ending any other way. And, you know, it's funny, we don't believe the president when he says most things, but we want to believe him when he says a vaccine is just around the corner, you know, and we're putting all our faith in that. And I know the signs so far have been good, but we're still probably a year from that vaccine getting into our arms, our nostrils, or wherever it's going to go. I mean, just the distribution. That's one thing Biden said this week. He said, we should be working right now on a national distribution system for this vaccine. And apparently we aren't, because just, you know, so they come up with a vaccine to pass the test, then how are you going to get it to everybody? I mean, that's a monumental task.
And who's going to, you're going to find some staggering percentage of the population won't take a vaccine.
Right.
That they're anti-vaxxers, or they don't trust the science behind this particular vaccine. And then question becomes
a lot of those people, but I'll bet when push comes to shove after a year of this, I saw a number on that, Eric, and I forget what it was, but I'll bet 97% of the people will happily take the vaccine. You think my number's high?
I think it is, because there's always a crazy at least 10% of the population who are really consider it to be an affront to their liberty to ask them to take something like that. Yeah. But no, I mean, I understand. First of all, you know, the vaccines are not foolproof. They're not perfect. And we don't know, even the vaccines they're working on, whether they will last any longer than, you know, they'll give you 6 months of immunity or something, or the coronavirus will mutate the way the flu virus does. And so this year's coronavirus vaccine will work for a while, but then you'll have to take another one.
Dr. Most was Kevin Most from the Central DuPage Hospital was telling us that the virus that people are getting in Chicago right now is, in fact, 2.0. This is a mutated version of the one that originally came over here from China or Europe or wherever we got it. I mean, there's different strains, and the strain we have right now, right, Steve, is
actually one than the original. True, but he also said it was a small mutation, and he said it's not unusual that there would be a mutation. So I think the words sound worse than the reality.
So what would you guys do then? I mean, so we're all in agreement that they should have postponed the sports in Illinois for the high school kids. Where are you guys on the hybrid in school or at home learning?
Well, if I were a parent, I would be tearing my hair out, parent of little kids. I would be tearing my hair out over the idea of having to keep my kids home again, as much as I would be tearing my hair out about the idea of sending them to school. I mean, I really do not envy people who have to decide what to do with their, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kids. You know, if you keep them home, it's really bad for them. If you send them to school, it's possibly fatal for members of the family. I think my instinct, if I were Governor Pritzker, would be to shut the schools down for the fall and really work on making distance learning work and put all my energies into that rather than trying to have plexiglass shields and extra classrooms and all that. I think that they're going to have to figure out how to make distance learning work. That would be my inclination for that. And same thing for colleges. I can't imagine it's going to be safe.
You know, the president of COD, it was COD, right, John?
Yep.
Said something interesting, and I defer to him. He's the expert. But apparently Miami of Ohio and other schools are offering a bounty. You said a $2,000 bonus if you take a gap year and just don't come back for a year. And he said that was a terrible idea. You know, the cynic in me would say that's because he's running a school where he wants students. But, you know, his argument was that you are taking a year away from your income eventually when you get out of school. Well, I mean, if the unemployment rate is 72%, I don't know that you're going to be hurting yourself that much. I kind of think that's an intriguing idea. Get a couple grand off your tuition and stay away for a year.
I think it costs $60,000 to go to Miami of Ohio for a year. Is that about what you paid?
You know what? I don't know what the bill was. I mean, it's like buying a car. The price, the ticket is never the cost. Noah got a lot. We were very fortunate. He was a smart kid. Got a lot of age, so.
Yeah, not many people pay retail at those kinds of schools anyway.
Right. A lot of kids, I think, are chafing at the idea of paying full tuition for University of Phoenix education, essentially.
Right, right.
I totally think that's fair. You know, I regret not asking him about that. Even COD, I think, should discount it if they're going to, and it'll be an inexpensive tuition bill, but if it's going to be all remote learning, my son is right now taking graduate classes at Loyola. That isn't cheap, and I think they should have discounted his tuition considerably because of the amount of graduate, he's doing graduate studies, which tends to be more independent, but I'm sorry, this is not what he signed up for and is paying for, and they're not offering a discount.
No, and you know, I run a business where we're trying to, a travel business where it's challenging because it's trying to get money back and make people whole who've lost trips, so I'm sympathetic to that, but I agree, my son was a second semester senior at Miami when this started, and for the second half of his second semester, you know, he never saw a professor again. It's not what we paid for. I understand how the schools can't really afford to refund the money or necessarily discount the money, but it's there's so many situations where we're just getting screwed, and that's just another one, I think.
Yeah, I can just imagine if you're a president of one of these places like COD, and you know, your costs, you still got to have those buildings, you got to pay your faculty. You're saving a little bit of money here and there on the light bills and whatever, but you know, your costs aren't going down that much, so it's hard for you to cut tuition
when you've got
all these bills coming. John, you were saying,
what's the object of going to college anyway? It's mostly to get a degree, so then you can go get a job that requires a degree. I think that the sort of learning that will follow you for your whole life, foundational stuff that you really need, you're getting before college. I've heard people say the law school doesn't need to be that long. And I kind of agree with, especially if you're a liberal arts major or something like that. If you lost a semester, Steve, I don't know what your son was majoring in, but unless it was something really technical where those last classes gave you some knowledge you had to have in the work world, I've got a degree in radio and TV. It never meant a lick to me. It's just a way of sort of stamping people as responsible adult went through the steps.
Well,
I think it's easy to overstate the loss of education that college kids will suffer because they missed a semester or two.
Well, in our family's case, he had a mentor who really took him under her wing and steered him to what he wants to do now. And she had underlying conditions, so she was especially sensitive. He never saw her again. He never had a telephone conversation, or she was going to help with the career or do things like that. They had no communication that way. He had another class that was a set designer for Kanye West that he was supposed to work on with. You know, they never got together. The guy said, my biggest role is going to be to help you get a job. Well, you know, early March, it was gone. I mean, I'm sure they tried to help if they could, but for that last sort of bit of college, whatever. It's not what we signed up for, but I understand the people all over the place. In my personal life, in many ways, I'm not getting what I signed up for elsewhere. I've got airline tickets to and from Cincinnati for a college graduation that we're never going to be able to use, you know, and I'm not going to drive to Cincinnati to use the flight. It's just one of the things we're losing so much through this.
I think that's a part of the debate about the $600 bonus on unemployment benefits too. Some people are coming out ahead. They're making, and again, I think it was Ted Cruz who said 68% of the people getting unemployment benefits are getting more than they made in their job. If that's true, and I don't believe everything Ted Cruz says, but even if that's true, I'm not sure that that's all that worrisome, right? I mean, the world's upside down right now. I'm not keeping score. Nobody's going to get rich off of these programs. Mike Madigan is still not only a member of the Illinois House, but he's also still the speaker, the quote-unquote speaker of the House, right?
Yeah, he's still the speaker of the House, as he has been for most of the last, three decades. And he remains the chairman of the Illinois Democratic Party. And I am not calling for him to leave the legislature or to lose his elected job, but I am calling on him. I have called on him to step down from the speakership and from his leadership of the party, because this Commonwealth Edison scandal is dragging his party down. It's dragging down his lawmakers. It's dragging down the prospects for Governor Pritzker's fair tax amendment, and it's really not right for someone who is under the kind of cloud that Madigan is under to continue in these very prominent leadership positions. And I'm not saying that he's guilty before being proven innocent. I'm saying there's certainly a lot of smoke there, and part of it is that Commonwealth Edison has admitted that they have orchestrated this decade-long bribery and influence scheme, where they were hiring associates of Madigan for do-nothing jobs. They were hiring law firms that were close to him. They were hiring lobbyists that were close with him. That there's all this going on as they were promoting their legislation, which happened to pass. And it's quite possible that this was all done with a nod and a wink, and no words were ever spoken. That which is assumed need not be spoken. And it's possible that there'll never be any charges filed against Madigan. But if this bribery scheme were going on while he's the speaker, while he's the head of the party, if he was aware of it, then he's culpable. But if he wasn't aware of it, or if he just let it happen, then he's incompetent. And either way, he should go. He's 78 years old. He's been in that job too long. I think that the argument for term limits for legislative leadership positions is very strong. It's time for some new blood for that party, and the party is suffering. There are now, I think I count five or six elected Democrats who've called for him to step down, and they're all women. There's State Rep Anna Stava Murray, Stephanie Kifowit, Tara Costa Howard, State Senators Melinda Bush, Heather Staines, and I think Iris Martinez. So that's six who've called for him to step down, all women. So far, but this is something that's continuing to grow, at where more and more Democrats are calling for him to step aside, and I think it's time. We'll see in the next week or so whether the snowball gets stopped by a tree or whether it keeps rolling. But we'll see what happens. But it's a really interesting story right now, and I think a lot of the future of the Democratic Party in Illinois rests on it.
$200 million in fines. There's two law firms that are representing a class action suit against ComEd. They want the $200 million or more back for anybody who's had a light bill for a long time. And I don't think we're going to get more than a light bulb as individual taxpayers or ratepayers out of it. You know, whenever they do that, it seems like some law firm makes a lot of money and then you get a coupon in the mail. Do you have any hope for something like that? Is that reasonable punishment, Eric?
I don't have a hope for that. In fact, I am often really skeptical of these class action suits for the very reason that you laid out, which is that it's the law firms that get a lot of money and the rest of us get like you say, a coupon. Do you remember there was a class action suit when Milli Vanilli was discovered to have been fake, and everybody who could show that they'd bought a Milli Vanilli disc got like $10, and then some law firm raked in hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's like nobody really needs the little small amount of money that you would get out of a Commonwealth Edison settlement. I would rather that that money come out of their profits and that they reinvested into a rate cut in the future rather than a little check cut to us from which a lawyer takes a big part of that. So I hope that doesn't go through.
I had $10 coming to me on a Milli Vanilli record, but I was too ashamed to admit that I'd ever bought a Milli Vanilli record. So
that was the rub. It went to the lawyers then, I guess, huh?
Hey, by the way, as I let you go, Eric, what do you think of the president's tweets this week about delaying the election? He's, you know, with a question mark saying maybe we should do that. Obviously, there's constitutional and legislative problems with that. What's he up to there?
I mean, it's all about trying to create an environment in which people doubt the results of the election, where there's something about the election that people aren't going to trust, and that he will be able then after the election is over to claim that it was either fraudulent or so compromised as to be meaningless. I mean, there are a lot of people who have said, I sound like Trump, a lot of people are saying this.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing this more and more, I should say. I'm hearing it more and more people are afraid that if Trump loses, he will stay in office. He will say, look, this election isn't right. This is, you know, these ballots can't be trusted. There's fraud everywhere. There's, you know, illegal immigrants voted. Whatever he's going to say, he is going to insist that he's still president. And it'll be an amazing constitutional crisis.
Yeah, you know, to me, that's about as significant as the seeds people are getting in China. Everybody's looking for something next to be worried about. I don't know what those packets of seeds are that are now in all 50 states, like it's a virus itself. Throw the things in the garbage. I'm not worried about that. And I feel the same way about this. He's not going to get anywhere with that. If he just refuses to leave office, then federal marshals will pick him up and carry him out of there. And Joe Biden will come in if Biden wins the election. You know, yeah. He can fulminate all he wants. That's not going to matter.
He'll still be the commander in chief of the military.
Really, but that's it.
He may be trying to foment, you know, actual unrest, armed unrest in the streets. If you convince people that this office is being stolen from them.
Oh yeah.
And there's a heavily armed contingent of people who support him.
I think that's the most likely scenario, that there will be gunfire. There will be, you know, it's not a civil war, but there will be pro and anti Trump people firing shots at each other over this. I can very much see something like that happen. I don't know what the details are that actually would make that moment happen, but yeah, I think people are armed enough, hostile enough, and have heard enough rhetoric that something like that could happen.
That's why you really have to hope for a landslide.
Yes.
One way or the other, I'll just say that in a neutral fashion. Yeah. You hope that this is not one of these situations like Bush v. Gore, where, you know, things are hanging in the balance in a way that we can't, that even honest brokers can't tell who actually won the election. That would be really bad for the country. You know, a landslide one way or the other is what we really have to hope for, so that there's just no question that the losers will go, yeah, well, we lost that fair and square. So let's hope.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Eric and Heather, who couldn't join us, and Lisa, who couldn't join us, and Darlene, who couldn't join us, and Austin, who couldn't join us, and Steve, who left us.
It's just you and me, John. The original rascals. We're here.
Good to see you, my friend. Thanks for chiming in.
Nice to see you. Talk to you next time.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.